This program is brought to you in part by Diane at Studio Z, offering weekly yoga classes, workshops, and private yoga instruction. Schedule and information available at 733-3210.
You're listening to KTNA Talkeetna. And now for Nuggets, a locally produced program focusing on the northern Susitna Valley, created by your friends and neighbors at Pothole Productions and Talkeetna Community Radio. From comic relief to serious beliefs, each week brings you a fresh nugget. Hi, I'm your host, Jenny Burr, and I work for the National Park Service as an education specialist at the Talkeetna Ranger Station. Tonight, I'm bringing you an Earth Day nugget to inspire all of us about what we can do to care for the planet, using examples from our neighbor and ecological community member, Denali National Park and Preserve. Earth Day is coming up this weekend, and this year there are two aspects of planetary care that I would like to address. First, with all the discussion in the media about climate change, including last week's nugget, I would like to focus some attention on what we can do individually and collectively about reducing carbon emissions to the atmosphere. Second, I want to connect our concern about carbon to the theme of this year's Upper Susitna Earth Day celebration, Healthy People, Healthy Planet. News stories on climate change are everywhere these days. Last week on Nuggets, Emily Petruzal took a look at the effects of climate change in the Upper Susitna Valley. Further north, weather data taken in Denali National Park and Preserve since 1925 indicates that temperatures have risen, as they have across the Arctic, leading to some dramatic changes. Scientists in the park are assessing climate change and its impacts by monitoring a variety of components of environmental change. Snow cover is one of these components, and snow surveys show that less snow is falling in the spring and that snow melt-off is occurring earlier. These changes may have cascading effects since snow thickness and the duration of snow cover affect the number of animals that can live in an area, movements of animal herds, types of plants that live in an area, soil temperatures, and hydrologic systems. Other indicators of a changing climate in the park include differences in vegetation, including tree lines advancing to higher elevations and invading open wetland sites, and ponds drying in some areas with plants starting to grow in these newly dried areas. Scientists are also comparing glaciers today with historical photos of these glaciers taken between 1916 and 1957. Several of these photo pairs show a dramatic loss of ice over the last 47 to 88 years. In addition to studying and documenting changes in park resources, Denali also cares for the park by reducing environmental impacts through actions such as lowering carbon emissions. I'd like to introduce Charlie Loeb, the coordinator of Denali National Park's environmental management team, to discuss some of the park's environmental efforts. Hi, Charlie, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Jenny. Thanks for having me.
What does the park's environmental management team do?
We are a group of folks who are in charge of setting goals and objectives for the park's environmental management practices, and then documenting that we've implemented what we've promised we've done. And it's often talked about as operating within a cycle of continuous improvement, where every year we set out some goals and objectives that we try and reach. And then at the end of the year, we look to see whether we did what we said. And if we have, we pat ourselves on the back and set the next set of goals and objectives and move forward in this cycle of continuous improvement.
And so can you highlight maybe just a couple of things that the environmental management team has done?
Sure. Well, actually, I might even back up a little bit to the late 90s when I first got involved in this. And before we had an environmental management team or an environmental management system. And at that time, there was some frustration on park staff that the National Park Service, for being a preservation agency, wasn't doing a particularly good job in terms of our own environmental practices, in terms of park operations and management. And when the opportunity came along, we asked that there was a new program being started up nationally for within the National Park Service to designate a few centers for environmental innovation. And Denali signed up to be one of those centers. Not every park in the country is one, but there are quite a number scattered around. And then a number of motivated individuals at the park really took off and began trying to transform us from an organization that ran things just the same way any other business or government agency would to one that was truly environmentally innovative. And we've done an awful lot in the time since, and we've gotten a more formalized structure now for working on environmental innovation. But to give a few examples of things that we've done, some of them have been relatively mundane. Things as simple as promoting recycling in the park, and we have an extensive recycling system. Switching out all those incandescent light bulbs with compact fluorescents. We've spent a lot of time looking at how we can reduce the number of toxic chemicals we use in the park. So we did a wholesale look at the types of janitorial products we use, for example, and took all the ones that were considered toxic and replaced them with something non-toxic. We tested performance characteristics and found ones that worked and switched out all those janitorial products. We used to have a lot of porta potties at the park, and anyone who's been out on a park bus or was out on a park bus 10 or 15 years ago remembers that that's what most of our rest areas used. Well, we've gotten rid of all those porta potties and the nasty blue chemical that goes with them, and we've replaced them with so-called SSTs, or sweet-smelling toilets, which don't use any chemicals at all. So those are some of the kinds of things that we've done. But we have done quite a lot that is directed specifically at your topic today in terms of reducing carbon emissions and looking at energy and how we use energy in the park. A few examples that come to mind, if you used to, wells at all of our campgrounds ran on generators. And now if you go around to our campgrounds, you'll notice that they're a lot quieter than they used to be, because several of those campgrounds, the water pumps have been replaced with solar-powered water pumps instead of diesel-powered water pumps. When we renovated the Wonder Lake Ranger Station a few years ago, we thought we could do a much, even though that's a historic building constructed way back in the 1930s, that we could bring some innovative environmental technology to use in that structure. And we got rid of the diesel generator there and replaced it with a hybrid propane solar system, so that most of the time the ranger station runs on solar power. When there's not enough rays from the sun, it switches automatically over to a propane burning generator. And now we run the electrical system for the ranger station and the complex of buildings around it with only 220 gallons of propane a year, as opposed to hundreds and hundreds of gallons of diesel fuel that we used to go through, and the accompanying oil. So those are a few examples of things that we've done through the park's efforts at demonstrating environmental leadership. And we're interested in doing projects like this, both for our own sake, because we are an organization that believes in conservation of resources. But part of the idea behind the Centers for Environmental Innovation was that we provide examples to the public. The parks are very public places. And there's an opportunity to teach the public about what kinds of technologies and practices are available that can help us all reduce our carbon impact on the environment or many of these other aspects of environmental management that people can incorporate into their day-to-day lives or their businesses or their agencies.
All right, thanks, Charlie. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Nuggets, and tonight, in honor of Earth Day, we're exploring some ways of reducing carbon emissions in the design and construction of new buildings and in transportation. First, let's look at Denali National Park's efforts towards incorporating elements of sustainable design in new building projects. Brad Harris is the U.S. Public Health Service Engineer Officer assigned as the construction manager for the Alaska Region National Park units. He spoke with me earlier to highlight how Denali has sought to be more energy efficient in the design of the Denali Visitor Center and the Eielson Visitor Center currently under construction.
There's a number of ways that the park has gone about making these new buildings more energy efficient. One of the ways is at the Denali Front Country Visitor Center. The design of the site was laid out so that the park would be able to allow some of the buildings to go cold in a winterized state while others were left open for the visitor use. In that way, they're not having to heat and have lights on and whatnot, and buildings that aren't being used. And a great example of that is that in the fall, when the visitor season drops off, but the visitor center remains open, the main restrooms of the facility, which we call the comfort station, and which is housed in a separate building, can be winterized and left unheated while the visitor center itself stays open for the visitors who want to come to the park in the fall. We tried to make use of what we call thermal mass. So thermal mass is a large mass of material that holds heat. So what we did is we constructed a huge concrete chimney in the middle of the building. And that chimney has a gas fireplace in it, and the gas fireplace burns, and the heat from that fireplace is forced to kind of go back and forth up the chimney so that the heat from the exhaust of that will warm that chimney. And then in the evening, when the building's unoccupied, it gets colder outside, the warmth from that chimney radiates out and keeps the building warm in the evening time. In addition to that, we took and put water pipes cast into the concrete walls of that chimney so that cold water can flow through these pipes round and round in the chimney and suck some of the heat out of the chimney to warm up the water. And when you use the washrooms in the visitor center and you go wash your hands, the water that comes out of the faucet isn't hot, but it's not cold. It's tempered water that's been warmed up entirely by the water pipe running through that chimney and picking up heat. So the Front Country Visitor Center went through a process that is administered by the U.S. Green Building Council. And through that process, it was given what's called a silver rating for leadership in engineering for environmental design. And that required it to meet enough specific criteria to get at least 33 points in their rating system, which it did. So it has a LEED Silver rating. And in starting the Eielson Visitor Center, we wanted to try to get even better than that. So we decided to shoot for a LEED Platinum rating. Now, LEED Platinum requires the facility to get at least 52 points, so almost twice as many as the Front Country Visitor Center. And so far, we're on track to be able to obtain that rating. And if we do, it will be the highest LEED-rated facility in the nation when it's completed at the end of this year. So some of the features that are unique to the Eielson are a little bit different than what the Front Country had. For one, the site design didn't have any advantage to having multiple buildings to let some go cold, because when the Eielson site is shut down for the year, the entire site's shut down for the year. Now, thermal mass, which I talked about with the fireplace at the Front Country Visitor Center, was addressed a little bit differently at Eielson, and what we did is put the building entirely underground on all but one side. So even the roof of the building will be buried. And what that does is it provides a lot of dirt insulation, basically. So the building is not subjected to the same temperature fluctuations that a building sticking up out of the ground would normally feel. At night, it would get colder outside, and the heat would seep out of the building. Well, now it's kind of contained underground, except for on one side of the building where we had to have a nice big span of windows for visitors to see the mountain and whatnot. So once again, at the Eielson Visitor Center, we are using solar panels to generate some of the electricity. The interesting aspect to that at Eielson is there is no electrical grid to provide the electricity that we need to run the facility. There's not a power company that provides electricity out there. So we're taking that solar energy and we're storing it in batteries with a system of inverters that changes it from the electricity generated by a solar cell to electricity that a building can use. And as the electricity is generated, it's stored in the battery banks and then it flows back out and feeds the building. Now, that alone wouldn't be enough to power the building, so when we started in the design, we had plans for a propane-powered generator to go in the maintenance building and provide probably the majority of the energy needed. It would still use the battery bank to store that energy, so it would only have to run for a couple hours a day, but we would be burning fossil fuel to do that. And, of course, propane was chosen because it has lower emissions and less issues to deal with fuel spills. But as the design progressed, we also implemented a hydroelectric system design. So what we're doing now, and we're just at the finishing stages of the design that's going to incorporate this into the project, is we'll put a small powerhouse that's 1,500 feet from the visitor center down in kind of a gully where there's a little stream. And we'll use the water from that stream to generate electricity and send it back up to the battery bank. And, of course, the creek flows all day and all night, so we'll be generating that electricity all day and all night and storing it in the batteries and then using it from those batteries as we need it. And our hope is that when we're completed with this system, between the solar generation and the hydroelectric, that we won't have to burn any fossil fuel during the summer months in order to power the entire facility. Thank you.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to an Earth Day Nugget. Tonight, we're learning about efforts towards reduction of carbon emissions by exploring some examples from Denali National Park and Preserve. Here's Charlie Loeb again to tell us more about the history and evolution of the park's transportation system.
Well, the thing that people maybe associate most with Denali and visiting Denali is, of course, the park bus system. And Denali was the original mass transit park. Lots of other parks in the country are now contemplating or implementing transportation systems of their own, using buses primarily to move visitors into and around their parks. And you think of places like Zion and Acadia that have implemented programs in the last 10 or 12 years, and other ones that are contemplating it for the future. Well, Denali started ours way back in 1972, and we've restricted travel by private vehicle past Savage River. And the hundreds of thousands of people who come to visit Denali every year, almost all of them ride buses that we offer through our park concession or with one of the Kantishna lodges. But the park bus system we're really seeing now is only the starting point for how we can really work to make Denali's transportation system one of the most energy efficient and sustainable transportation systems for any national park in the country. We're right now engaged in a conversation with the communities up in the Denali borough about how we can provide a community transit system to bring people from the surrounding communities into the park entrance and help visitors move around between communities without using personal transportation. In a way, this is a necessity because so many of our visitors already arrive without their own vehicles, by railroad car, tour coach. But it's something that we think will greatly help reduce the number of vehicle trips, the congestion, the need for parking up at the park. And in turn, that also plays into reducing the amount of fuel that's used by visitors to Denali and employees at Denali, whether inside or outside the park. Within the park itself, we've certainly have experimented with ways that we can make the transportation we do use more efficient and come up with transportation alternatives that don't involve burning so much fossil fuel. You'll see a few electric hybrid cars running around, including one right here in Talkeetna. We have a Ford Escape hybrid that is used by our environmental education staff, by Jenny down here. But we have some hybrid Honda Civics up north as well. In the winter, we've experimented with using four-stroke snow machines instead of the standard two-stroke engines that are most common. And that's been, they've been really useful in many applications. Though, of course, our best experiment with emission-free transportation at the park has been the use of sled dogs to patrol much of the park during the wintertime, which have few fossil fuel emissions except those associated with getting their dog food to the park. Some of the things that we've done at the park have also been not necessarily particularly sexy new technologies, but just good changes in practice. So, for instance, we spend a lot of time thinking about reducing vehicle trips at the park and how we can do that, and encouraging our employees to carpool when they're going to job sites, watching the amount of government vehicle traffic that we send out on the park road. These are important things that we do because ultimately avoided trips is the most important way that we can all reduce fossil fuel emissions. The things that I've been most proud of working on, though, have been associated with getting people out of any kind of gas-powered vehicle altogether. And we've worked at Denali at providing a much better pedestrian and bicycle circulation system than we've had in the past. The park has put in a bike trail that connects most of our entrance area visitor facilities together, and multiple pedestrian trails that enable you to circulate throughout the park entrance area. But also, working with the community, we've collaborated to create a pedestrian and bike trail system that extends all the way out into the Nanana Canyon Business District. Much of this work was done by the community, but we were happy participants in trying to make that happen. So if you haven't been up to the park recently, you'll notice in the last few years that there are now extensive paved bikeways, bike paths running alongside the highway that go down to separated pedestrian bridges across Kingfisher Creek and the Nanana River that enable folks who are staying at hotels out in the canyon to walk or ride their bikes over into the park and get to the Denali Visitor Center or the Murray Science and Learning Center or the Wilderness Access Center, where they can pick up buses into the park or to sled dog demonstrations. Ultimately, we hope that people using these kind of pedestrian and bike facilities will really reduce the amount of motorized vehicle transportation that's necessary in the park. And I'm happy to say that those are amenities, of course, we have down here in Talkeetna, too. Wonderful bike path along the spur road, which I find myself using very frequently.
Bike and walking paths are a great catalyst for improving people's health through physical activity. When used for commuting, these paths can also be a catalyst towards a healthier planet. And the Talkeetna Spur Road bike path is ideal for bike commuters. During the Upper Susitna Earth Day celebration this Saturday at the Upper Susitna Senior Center, you can get a jump start on biking by attending a free bike maintenance workshop with Jim Britton at 2 p.m., followed by a bike rally at 3 p.m. Participants in the bike rally will bike down the Talkeetna Spur Road bike path to the Upper Susitna Soil and Water Conservation District office at Mile 2, where refreshments will be served. With all of the press on the state of the environment, sometimes it can feel overwhelming to figure out how we can help. Denali National Park and Preserve is committed to testing out new technologies and helping people learn about solutions that help the environment. Though addressing the environmental issues of our planet may seem like an insurmountable mountain, each step up the mountain can take us closer to the top. Each of us can reduce our carbon emissions through steps like replacing incandescent light bulbs with compact fluorescents, recycling, and choosing to use our vehicles less and our own body power more for transportation. Hope for a better planet can come in the form of knowing that each of these steps count. You've been listening to Nuggets, a locally produced program focusing on the Northern Susitna Valley. Do you have a Nuggets you'd like to share? If you would like to host a show, be a guest on this program, or get involved in some other way, please call the station at 733-1700. You may also contact us through the website at ktna.org. Next week on Nuggets, a program on domestic violence awareness with mental health counselor Lauren Champagne and her guests. You're listening to KTNA Talkeetna. Up next is City Arts and Lectures.